This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 20B of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have the second half of a group discussion on rituals and play styles. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome back to part two of the discussion group. It's going pretty good so far, don't you think, Beast?
Yes, the first round was very, very lively with some great feedback.
Spirited, I think, is the word. It's an irreverent group. The internet has changed the way people connect, meet, and play. We have lost some of the ritual that once ruled the leather lifestyle. What do you think? Yes, Mistress?
Can I say cuss words on here?
Yes, you can.
Bullshit.
Why bullshit?
Well, who wrote the rules? Who wrote the rituals? Who agreed on them? What committee said, here's how you have to do A, B, C, and D? Who says you have to have a collaring ceremony? Who says you have to kneel when you meet somebody? Who made all that crap up? And who says that it's gone?
Take it, Kate.
I agree to a certain degree. On the other hand, the internet has just made it so much more accessible to more people. I would never have found the community without the internet, because I still didn't believe that it existed outside of porn until I stumbled on somebody online.
I don't disagree with any of that. What I disagree with is that there are a large number of people who say that there are rules, there are rituals, that there's, you know, something to follow, just like getting a driver's license or getting married or whatever. There are steps that have to be taken and followed. And what is leather ritual that we've lost?
I just realized I may have totally just missed the whole point of what you said.
I think it's true that there's less ritual, but I don't limit that to leather. I think that humanity is currently a lot less formal and a lot less interested in the rituals that were very important to people 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And so I don't think this is a phenomenon that's limited to this community. I think it's more of a general lessening of the importance of the ritual.
Please explain to me the ritual.
Any ritual. Some people are very interested in the formality of flagging. It's in my right pocket. It's in my left pocket. It's blue. It's black. It's purple. It's chartreuse. And you know what? I couldn't even keep it straight which ear, you know, in the 80s, if you had an earring, if you were a guy and you had one ear pierced and it was either this one and you were gay, and or it was that one and it was straight. And it was different for every group of people, I'm sure. But my point is that, you know, I never could even keep that straight, much less, you know, I'm not interested to.
Okay,
I meet people
point.
And I take them individually. Ooh. As opposed to being interested in that sort of thing.
Bitsy, keep in mind that a lot of the rituals have been handed down by the gay leather community that have been around for 50 and longer years. Mm-hmm. And so these are the rituals that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. The way we are today is a abbreviated, very much shorter version of that, and it has adapted to the electronic lifestyle.
When I first got into the lifestyle, I was told to go to this site, which is no longer up and running, and read all these things on dominance, submission, slave, master, you know, and it was from viewpoints of slaves and masters and whatnot. So I went there and I read, and then there was a section on rituals, and rituals can be anything, like a tea ritual, or, you know, like when you come home in the evening, you take your clothes off, you put your cuffs on, you go kneel at the foot of your master. Not happening with me, but, you know, I mean, that is a ritual. That is something that you do all the time. But not everybody has to use those rituals. Some people have no rituals, and that's okay.
Like the lifestyle, it's made up of people, and people are evolving all the time. So the lifestyle is evolving. But what I think what's important here is that there's a history there that we need to understand. You mentioned it came out of the gay community over 50 years ago. I think that's really important for the new people coming into the community when they start looking for rituals, that they understand that it's not something that they're making up on the fly now, that there is some history to be learned.
How interesting you gave me that opening to segue. History. We are lacking as a community, as a tribe, as whatever organization you want to put us in, with an understanding of the history of where we came from, where we're going to, what's come to pass, what's could go and be going forward. But with history, we also have to be with understanding that history is wrote by a very few select people with a certain intellectual bend often. What they may have recorded as rituals for the entire community, maybe only a small subset that was of interest to them. And further, we have the whole revisionist history, that history is wrote by certain people that come out on top, so that certain rituals went out while others disappeared. Back to Bitsy's comment, we are much less ritually orientated as a global world. Whatever community you want to discuss, many of the younger Asians are rejecting the very ritualized path that their elders followed, and this is causing considerable friction. Today, ritual is whatever two people decide is productive for their particular relationship, in my mind.
Ritual goes back in history. You know, you can look at Indian subcontinent and all the rituals that have gone on there. You can look at American Native rituals that have gone on here, rites of passage. And so rituals aren't new to societies. The roots in what we do are based on the leather lifestyle. And so we have adopted some of those, and we have updated some of those to fit. A ritual can be anything you do when you come home from work. You take off your clothes, you take a shower, you put on something comfortable, and you do it every day. That's a ritual. And it can be in service to someone. It can be in service to yourself. Rituals are just that. How you adapt them to the lifestyle and how you make them kinky, how you make them play in a community is a completely different subject and up to you.
Well, I was just going to say that, talk about why we have rituals in the first place. So often we have the ritual. There's a need there to transcend words. We feel something so strongly, our need for submission, our need for dominance, how we feel about masters and mistresses, how we feel towards our slave and sub, to show those relationships and to give form to them and to reinforce the feelings. It feeds the relationship. It's not something that somebody makes you do. It should be something you choose to do that between the two of you has meaning.
Going back to the history of rituals, new people coming into the community, whether they're 18 or whether they're 48, they have to want to learn that history. We can't force it on them. Just like if you go into a play space and they have a dress code, and that dress code is all black, you know, leathers, what have you. And say your ritual is blue jeans, flip-flops, and a t-shirt with no bra on it, and that's what your master wants you to wear. Well, you can't go to that play space because they have certain rituals that they make everybody else do. Egos get in the way a lot when it comes to trying to teach people new things or teach people history, because people who are tops, masters, dominants, a lot of times they have a huge ego. And trying to teach them or trying to get them to learn or to see your point of view, I guess, is hard because they don't want to hear what you have to say when it comes to rituals.
A couple years ago, Lee and I attended a ritual at Frolicon in Atlanta, and it was a woman who was going through a rite of passage in a job. She was taking a new position, and she felt that she wasn't quite prepared for it, and she was going through quite an ordeal. We watched this ritual with at least 100 people in the room, and it was something that struck the soul of every single person in the room. and it involved flesh hooks and pulling a load around the room. And as she would pass the different people, they would give her information that she needed in life and transfer from their soul to hers and to make her life enriched. And the last group of people she came past as she walked around the room was her family. And these are the people that gave her all the love that she needed to get this done. And the very last person then was her husband. And when she went through that, she just broke down and she pulled this load. She fought through it physically. She gained the emotional power to deal with it. And then she broke down. And there was not a dry eye in the room. And that is a modern day ritual that is within our lifestyle. And everybody in that room shared in it. There's not enough of that going on nowadays to where people understand that. And when you see something like that, it is an absolute magic moment.
Well, I think that history is very important. We should all know where we come from as a lifestyle, as a community, whatever. And I also believe that rituals are very important because they help us connect in a certain way. One specific ritual, you know, you coming home as a slave or submissive, you come home, you get naked, you kneel in front of the doorway until your master or dom comes home. That may not necessarily work for this relationship over here. While I think it's important to have a ritual, I don't think it necessarily has to be the exact same ritual as, you know, three couples in Iowa have.
I would also like to add to that that really going back to the actual question of whether the internet is changing this, I think one thing that the internet is doing for us is showing us what a wide variety of people, of personalities, of interests, and of need for rituals there are. I think that some people might need a ritual, and I think other people just don't, or certainly not in the same context that the first person. You know, I had not actually, until I saw this question, I had not even considered the internet and the communication that I had done there for many years before I found a physical community to be a community. And then all of a sudden my paradigm completely shifted and I realized that there were two completely separate parts of my kink. You know, I've got the stuff that I really only enjoy in a mental non-corporeal forum such as online and the things that I enjoy to do physically. And this is something that I learned from the internet. Now, I don't necessarily need a ritual for that. I don't necessarily, you know, I have some relationships where I do have a particular ritual that I follow. I have other relationships where we don't really need a ritual at all. I think what the internet is doing is teaching people the variety of options so that they can decide for themselves what kind of ritual they need and whether they need one at all.
See, I don't think it's the internet's fault that this is happening. I think it's just made everything so much, it's made information so much easier to get a hold of. You know, we were already a melting pot. And when you bring different cultures or whatever beliefs in together, things are going to change. So it's just made that easier.
A couple things that y'all have been talking about, Woody, what you mentioned, and Bitsy, what you mentioned, and also what you mentioned, Gabrielle, about a couple things came to mind about the internet. The community and rituals in the community, it was much more localized. It was much more, it was smaller. The internet came in and just, you know, was woohoo, we're on, you know, millions of people had access, typing a few little keys, and people made shit up. This is how it is because I'm Mr. Master or whatever.
I mean, people lie on the internet?
Yeah, can you imagine?
And I'm dating a French model.
Right? So, you know.
Bonjour.
So the internet is good and bad. It's bad because a lot of people who are really sincere and real, legitimate, are being exposed to a lot more nut jobs. Nut jobs have access to the community that way. But as far as rituals go, Woody, what you were saying about the leather rituals that are basis of much of what we do, and because there are so many people that are here now that are new and don't really know anything about anything or don't care to know anything about anything, they just want to get laid, which is, hey, that's great, but the leather rituals don't apply to them. So I want to ask you, I mean, I have an understanding of leather rituals, but I want to ask you, Woody, what leather rituals were you referring to?
When I was mentored, my mentor went through a leather house and started as doormat and worked her way up through the house. She gave to me the feeling of what it was like to have to go through the stages of earning her way into this society. It was a leather house near a university. It had all of the levels up to the grandmaster. She was able to go through as a law student, starting at her freshman year all the way up through law school, and came out the top of it with a knowledge of the depth. And each time you wanted to rise up in the house, you had to go through a ritual of giving yourself and making yourself worthy of the next level. And it is part of giving back to community that goes with this. It brings a stable environment. It brings a level of understandings, and it brings giving back to the community, which we don't see a lot of today. The Kinky Cast is all about giving back to community. That is why we're all sitting here right now.
I agree with what you said, and I understand what you're saying about the steps needed and how people have moved up through service and through learning to a higher position, or not necessarily higher position, but to a different position, a position with more understanding. And I appreciate that. But again, the internet has bombarded the scene with so many people that the ones that actually know this, how can they possibly teach everyone? Again, through Kinky Cast, that's one tool. But those that just don't care to learn, I'm on FetLife, and I have, I don't know, 600 people in my friends list. I have a lot of friends. And my feed is full of comments. Oh, beat me. You beat me black and blue yesterday. That was great. And this is a guy who had a paddle in his hand for 3 months, and he's beating people black and blue. You know, this to me is not the scene that I want to be in. And, you know, I'm a masochist, to beat me. But there's no knowledge there. There's no training there. There's no respect there.
Respect is very important. And everybody go listen to Master Jerome on an episode a few back, because he talks about going through the community service and what it's like.
I never prescribed to the fraternity concept of working your way up. That's personal preference. I think that there's multiple paths. I do believe that there's a certain lack of respect for other people's rituals in this community, certainly. Some people's rituals are very meaningful to them. Some are very casually taken and very casually discarded. It gets to be a little tricky on what you respect and what you just tolerate for the moment. But rituals are something that we need more of in this community. More respect, I think, would be a better term.
I just want to reiterate, yes, rituals are very important. But when you're talking about leather rituals aren't necessarily important to the community as a whole, because the community is made up of so many different genres of people. The leather rituals are important to those that follow the leather lifestyle, but aren't necessarily as important to someone who follows a more primal lifestyle. Yes, they're important, but not necessarily to everybody. And when you have an influx of different mindsets coming together, it's going to look like it's kind of lost some of its importance.
Leather, the basis, I think the four components.
Orgasm,
that's in every, that's, sorry. Bring it.
Charity, integrity, brotherhood, and respect.
I think those basic concepts need to be reiterated everywhere and reinforced everywhere, because what we do, we have relationships with people throughout, no matter if you're primal, whatever you identify as. You're having a relationship, and you need to be clear with yourself and with the other person. So I think those are very strong traits that need to be reiterated and taught.
The values. Yes, I agree. The values 100%, but not necessarily the actual rituals that are performed.
Well, yeah, that's going to vary too. Yeah.
As I've said in the first half, I looked for a community for years and years and years. I was very interested. I would have been thrilled to have been tapped at the university level to have been part of such a household. I'm the kind of girl who has been waiting her whole life for her boss to make a pass at her. You know, I'm like, where, you know, these things just don't happen to me. And I'm the person that I worked at a place once where a manager was asked to leave because of unwanted advances towards a coworker. And I was like, you picked the wrong girl, dude. That, you know, what can I tell you? Or actually, in this case, it was a woman, but she still picked the wrong person because I would have not said anything and it would have been fun. But anyway, my point is that I would have been thrilled to be a part of such a household and learn such things then. I'm a little old for that now. I'm not the least bit interested to start in a house and work my way up now. Although when I was younger, I was very interested in rituals. I find myself less so now. And it's about, again, the community. You have certain people who need certain things and like certain things. I think that, like for instance, I don't necessarily believe in marriage, but I love to go to a good wedding, you know, where you have a nice little ceremony, but then everybody stays.
And cake.
But everybody stays for hours and they have toasts and they dance and they, you know, not just one of these, for lack of a better way of saying it, Protestant weddings where
a
big fat Greek wedding is wonderful, but you go to the service and if it's longer than 10 minutes, you're looking at your watch and then you run down to the reception hall and the second you've scarfed your cake, your butt's out of there. I, you know, what's the point in that ritual? I'm more interested in the ritual as a point of community where you go and you have the little ceremony, but then the ritual is about growing your interaction, growing your relationships, growing the closeness that you have with the other people present at the ritual, as opposed to just a ritual for ritual's sake.
I think Betsy has hit the nail on the head there. Empty ritual is nothing, but ritual that's full of meaning and taken with seriousness is very valuable.
I'm going to risk making a segue off of Kate's empty ritual, and I'll probably get some death threats. What about the ritual that goes with gore?
Oh.
Load it.
You know, if it works for them, let them have it.
But it does work for so many, and this is a ritual with the foundations are shaky, shall we say?
If you get really right down to it, everything we do is a bit of a mind fuck. It's all about props. We use titles, rituals, collars, toys, sensation, everything to build a fantasy that moves us, that means something to us. So as much as I would like to make fun of people who are into gore, on the other hand, I have to say, like you said, if it works for them, and who's to say I'm any better for having these fantasies about, you know, pirates coming, taking me away. It's
Vikings.
Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm. Well, Johnny Speaking Depp's French. A whole fetish right there. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to change it just a little bit because I have a little different opinion. To me, I take rituals just like I take religion. I was raised in the Catholic Church. Catholics love rituals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, okay. They do.
So just because I was born and raised, educated at Catholic schools, does that mean that I'm a ritual kind of person? Not at all. I use it as a guide. I respect it. I'll honor it. I'll do all that the same way I will do with the rituals we have in the community. I will use it as a guide. I'll respect it. But my relationship and what I do is not based on rituals. It's based on what I've learned and obtained from rituals and interpreted it my way to fit my needs.
If you had certain kinks that fed into those Catholic background rituals, there are a lot of people out there who have confessional
then
and priest fantasies going on where that whole ritual feeds into their
yeah,
kink.
Sure.
Now, going back to the gore thing, correct me if I'm wrong. The Gorian lifestyle, that is based on like a series of books. Is
a series
that correct?
Of really bad books.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to look at it from a more broad standpoint, in modern day, aren't all the rituals that we do, whether it's the Catholic Church or gore, aren't they all based on a book? To some degree. So
the Bible.
Exactly. So
Dianetics.
Exactly. L. Ron Hubbard. So what is wrong with
good
with gore if that's what works for those people?
There's
you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Whether or not we personally find value in those rituals is irrelevant. If the people practicing those rituals find meaning and fulfillment and are able to feel moved in the way that that ritual moved you guys at FrolicCon a couple of years ago, then it's a valuable ritual to those people.
Exactly like I was saying earlier, that the leather rituals are important to those who follow the leather lifestyle, not necessarily to anyone else.
But I think a lot of people don't realize, they've never gotten into it, so they haven't experienced just how meaningful a ritual can be
in
the right way.
That's true, I think.
If anybody ever says that I did this, I'll deny ever defending Gore.
However, you're on tape.
There's it's proof.
This is okay. Being recorded.
It's okay.
It's okay. Nobody can see my face. At least the rituals in Gore are written down. They're in a book.
That's true.
They can be followed. All of the quote-unquote rituals that people searched for in the gay and leather community and try to recreate and claim as ours. Somebody did something over here. Somebody did something over there. None of it was consistent. None of it was written down. Nobody ever said, this is how it is. In Gore, it's very plain.
Well, it's kind of the same way with a lot of the neo-pagan paths. Until Gardner came along, nobody really wrote it down. Or if they did, it was lost along the thousands of years. And so, you know, just because it's not written down doesn't necessarily make it invalid.
Yeah, interjecting it, both of these are interestingly more of oral traditions, or at least initially they were oral traditions, and it's harder to get a fix on those later.
I'm not disparaging them in any way because they're not written down. What I'm saying is it's very difficult to claim that you are doing something in this tradition when there is nothing concrete. Mm-hmm.
And there are 10 million opinions on what is that tradition.
And really, the leather lifestyle was this bar in San Francisco did things this way, and this bar in Dallas did things this way. And it was all surrounding the bars and the clubs, and everybody did things differently. So there is no one true
no
way.
One true
and
way.
Then you have New York.
I'm so glad you did that accent and not me.
With certain exceptions, yes, a lot of these rituals started off in the bars, especially in San Francisco and New York. However, a lot of documentarians within the gay leather lifestyle did write the books. They are out there. You can buy them today. There's full ritual sets printed, distributed, and some of the top leathermen in the country are known for that.
Right. But was that somebody sat down and said, this is the way it has to be done? Or somebody recorded what was done?
Yeah, it's written down now, but it wasn't necessarily always written down.
How does a ritual start? It's done and then it's written down.
Okay, unless you're L. Ron Hubbard.
We used the example of the Catholic Church.
Or it's done, you know, and done,
that
and
was
done.
Decided. All of the rituals in the Catholic Church were decided upon and set forth. They weren't created as they went along.
Yes, they were.
I'm not getting involved in the religion argument because that could go really wrong.
We must remember that religious rituals are often means to have a rote pattern to get to a certain point during a crisis moment, that you have this path that is tried and true. You've used it over and over, and you can expect to reach a certain state at the end of this ritual. And that's how many of these religious rituals evolved. I don't know that we have the same documentation on the leather rituals. The reason that you had this ritual was to reach X state at the end. I'm not sure that was ever explored.
Well, if we look at adoption of rituals, you know, you go back, Christians adopted the pagan rituals in many cases, or at least redefined them.
Or the days, anyway.
Mm-hmm. The days, certainly the Christmas celebration that we know of today is based on a pagan festival at the solstice. So these sorts of things are all adjusted to meet certain celebration calendars and the rituals that go with it, the May Day celebrations and all these sorts of things. They are rituals that have been around for thousands of years.
That goes right back to the original question. It may seem that the rituals have been lost because they've been adapted to fit someone else. So I don't think they were ever actually lost. They were just kind of converted.
Adjusted to fit.
Converted.
I think that the pagan aspect is important. I think that the pagan rituals do help you reach a goal. They can help you reach a goal. Walking a labyrinth helps you reach a goal. Having an altar set up with different implements meaningful to you helps you reach a goal, helps you get to a headspace, helps you define a goal, a purpose. I think that's all important. I don't know why it wouldn't be.
And when you get right down to it, isn't that what every scene is, a ritual?
Yes.
With a certain aim in mind.
So when I look at a ritual or I experience a ritual, and I think of it as a process. So my corporate mind is coming out, and it's, you know, you have standard operating procedures.
ISO.
And so if it's written down, like B said, it is something that you can follow a process to take care of a certain situation and to reach an end goal.
This can go off on a whole other topic, but going back to what you were saying, Chrissy, it can be said the same of Catholic rituals. Mm-hmm. They're set forth to attain a certain goal.
Exactly.
To reach a certain state of mind. And this could be, I don't know if it's an age-old question or if it's kind of a new one, but is BDSM or being kink part of the lifestyle, whatever, is it a spiritual experience?
Yeah, that's a whole,
for many it is.
Yes, I think that's a whole other discussion.
And things change, just like we're saying the internet changes certain rituals. Things change. Catholic religion, once again, when I was a kid, it was said in Latin. Now it's in English. They didn't have they substituted for the wine. Now they serve the wine. I mean, things have changed there, just like things have changed in the community with internet changes. I mean, you have to adapt with changes.
Play styles, what's yours? What is your play style, Kavika?
My play style, it varies. Typically, I might identify as a heavy bottom with certain people, with others. Whenever I top, I might be more of I can be a sensual top. I play a lot with new people. So that's more of an introductory type where I'm introducing people into the scene. And then I have some people that I will play with heavy. So I have a wide variety of play.
Ms. Tress, what's your play style?
Completely depends on the goal, on my goal with the person. It could be very heavy. It could be very sadistic. It could be very sensual. It could be very light and fun.
Bitsy?
I would tend to agree with that. There's so many things I want to explore that I find myself trying to set as few limits as possible so that I can experience more, especially as a bottom and as a top. Well, I just like to hurt people.
SDS.
No, yeah. You wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I would.
No.
Yeah, I would.
I don't really know what my play style is. I like to have fun. I like it to be light. Sometimes I like it to be hard, heavy-handed. Sometimes I like it sensual. It just, you know, depends on my mood, I guess. But ultimately, it depends on my dominant.
When I think of lifestyle play, I enjoy bottoming in the submissive role and flogging, I guess. But more so, I think about service. And that is where my mind is the majority of the time.
I am a bottom. I would also say that I'm a masochist. But my play style, whether it's public or private, depends on who I'm playing with. You know, it could be impact. It could be sensual. It could be sharp, pointy metal things. It just depends on who I'm playing with. And I mean, if you go to my FetLife page, my list of fetishes is like 900 pages long. And so it's a wide variety of things.
What do the initials SAM stand for?
You just happened to ask me that question, huh?
Yeah, I did.
Smart ass masochist.
If the foo shits wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kate?
I'm trying to remember what play is.
Some people are that old.
Yeah. When I started out playing mostly with a very heavy sadist. So I was very much into pain, even though I'm not really much of a masochist. I can eroticize a little bit of it. But the play was more about the submission and being able to take it and to make someone proud of me. But if I played with somebody else, I used to joke that I was a bottom to many, a submissive to a few, and a slave to one. Because, again, other people have said what you play depends so much on the chemistry of the person you're playing with and where you're trying to go. Sometimes I like it soft. Sometimes I like it hard. I always like it with an orgasm.
You like it hard?
Kate, I like what you said. Can I adopt that? Bottom to many, submissive to few.
Just got to put my copyright on it.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay. We'll stamp it. But I don't like bottoming generally to the masses. It's boring. And sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's fun. But mostly, I don't go there. It just doesn't do anything for me and to get hit just because I like to have a connection and get into it and be submissive. I can't.
I like the heavy, thuddy flogging as just a mean of stress release, and it's like a massage
to
me.
Yeah, it is.
And that, to me, is bottoming. It's not about me pleasing anybody but me.
Yeah, that's true. So. That's true.
The selfish aspects of play can come in, especially in a bottom scenario, to where it's like you say to the top, okay, have fun, and you just go be all about yourself. Is that right, Kate?
Mm-hmm. This brings up a question that I have asked someone before and got an answer that kind of confused me a little bit, and I'm still quite unclear on it. But the question that I posed was to someone who identifies as a slave, and we were discussing the endless discussion of what's the difference and all the terms. But I made the statement that, well, in a scene, you are a bottom, right? And her response was, no, I am slave. That, I don't know, for some reason, I could not wrap my head around that. Because in a scene, you have a top and a bottom, or multiple tops and multiple bottoms. Yes?
In a scene, you do. You know, that is the roles you take. If you take it from a slave point of view to where you are in service, you integrate that into it.
As a bottom.
Many cases, the scene's more complex than a top, bottom, doer, receiver. It can get really involved and complex. Most scenes, yes, we have a top and a bottom, giver and a taker. But that's not the only way to do it.
I really liked what Chrissy said about how it can get really boring just bottoming to the masses. I liked the idea of the individual connection. I said that as a top, I just like to hurt people, and that's absolutely true. But in general, I like to hurt them in the ways they like to be hurt. And so as such, it's completely different from person to person. I have one particular play partner who just really likes to be spanked. That's really all he wants, is to be spanked on the butt. And I've gotten pretty good with some paddles because of that. I have another play partner who wants to be thrown around and slapped. So, you know, there are just so many different ways to do it. And I think also the whole idea of a specific top and a specific bottom is, I agree, that would probably work for some. And most of the time it works for me too. You know, as a switch, I have to say a certain level of fear that my bottom might turn on me is kind of exciting. I'm just saying.
Before you leave that, speak as a bottom now.
Well, as a bottom, really, like I said, there are so many things, so many limits to explore. I like to come to a versatile and open-minded top and say, so what do you want to do today? And see if it sounds good and try it.
I'm a bottom submissive slave. I'm on that side. I like it there. I'm really comfortable there. But occasionally, every now and then, I can feel the power shift. I can feel it change. Mm-hmm. And I'm on top just for a little bit. And I'm really good for a little bit. Then I'm like, oh, no, I can't do this. No, this is not for me. this whole flood of emotion. I have to go back to where I'm supposed to be.
Well, and see, as a bottom, I kind of take the same mindset that you do as a top. Depending on who I'm playing with, I want to give them what they need.
Yes.
While I do like to play, and I like to play with several people, I much prefer to play with a core group of people or a core few people. And I'm going to admit something I probably shouldn't, but when I give the top what he wants, a lot of the tops that I play with feed on the fear factor. Well, I can fake fear pretty well.
You're talking about TMI.
Yeah, I think maybe now you're not going to be faking it so much, huh?
Probably not.
One of the things I just wanted to say about Chrissy talking about bottoming to the masses, the one time when that is really useful is when you're learning, when you're first starting out, because I had no idea how many different styles were out there until I played with a bunch of different people.
And that is something that is taboo to so many people, is the ideal of casual play. Casual play is, in my opinion, an absolute necessity to develop safe play skills.
One of the things I do, and I'm talking strictly being in top mode right now, since I am a Switch, and when I'm in top mode, I play so many different ways, but the end result, I like to be the same. And the end result is I do whatever I can to try to get my bottom into subspace. That's actually my ultimate goal, because a lot of times I'm in some sort of DS relationship. I enjoy playing with them. I want them to get maximum joy out of it. I'll get maximum joy out of it. If they're a pain slut, they'll get the pain slut. But at the end, I want them to feel good and to get the subspace that they like.
What is this subspace thing?
Yeah, you don't know anything about that.
Kavika, here's my number.
I was about to ask you, what is your play style?
As far as the casual play partners or casual play being taboo, my response to that is fuck that, because
hear, hear.
Being the new one here, I want to gain these experiences, and I'm not going to gain the experiences that I want from only playing with two people, where I could gain more experience and maybe learn something about myself and wants and needs that I didn't even know I needed unless I'm playing with five people.
I never noticed there was a unspoken taboo about casual play partners. Now,
well, you can tell
partners,
that if you go to the local club and you look at how people interact, there's not a lot of casual play outside of a tight group of people. You probably get more play than anybody I know, and I salute you for that. I don't know how you do it, Gavika, because I just don't get casual play offers anymore, and I would like to, but it's just
hint, hint.
Any takers?
If when you're playing casually or whatever, if your master dominant is giving you the kind of play that you want, like you were talking about not letting your submissives or slaves go into headspace. In my way of thinking, if you give your submissive or slave what they want as far as play, then wouldn't your satisfaction be more because they're going to do their utmost to please you?
Well, that's if you have a dom or a master. I don't have a dom or a master. I have play partners.
If someone's playing you, if they're doing a knife scene on you and you don't like knives at all,
well, then that should have been negotiated ahead of time.
I know. I'm just saying as an example, if you don't like knives, then you're not going to get off as well as if they spanked you. And when you don't get off as well or satisfied as much, then you don't really want to give.
I know what you're saying. It's a whole thing about going back and having your needs met. Are mm-hmm. you getting what you need in the scene, in the relationship? Because if you're harboring resentments over not getting what you think you need and want,
right,
you're less likely to be in the right mindset to please the dominant or your play partner.
But there are many potatoes. Potatoes?
Tomatoes.
How many different ways can you prepare a potato?
A lot.
So how many different ways are there to sample? Even if you love potatoes, how many different ways are there to sample that potato?
A lot.
So you need different cooks and different styles to find your favorite.
I think this goes to a whole bigger question and parallels relationships in general. You know, if your needs aren't being met by a relationship, it's not going to last very long.
Mm-mm.
I think the best play partners, and this is something you can only find out by playing with them, are the ones who kind of have a symbiotic thing going on. You know, you have the person who is nominally the top and the person who is nominally the bottom, but that does not mean that the top is not serving the needs of the bottom.
Right.
So I think that in the best of both casual and long-term kinky relationships, it's just the same as a vanilla relationship, that if it's not a symbiotic relationship of the needs being met, it's just not going to work long term.
And I agree with that. And that's why, as a bottom, I try to give whatever my play partner needs. For me, I have
like I said earlier, a few specific people that I play with. And each one has their own style. And so depending on what I need or what they need or whatever, if I'm had a really stressful day, I'm not going to go to, you know, a play partner who plays more sensually. I'm going to go to Mr. Sadist over here who's going to beat the living shit out of me. And that way I can get rid of that stress. But if I just really am wanting to be turned on, you know, then I'm going to go to the more sensual partner.
You know, that's a problem I have. I can't find play partners. They say, you're a heavy bottom. I'm like, talk to me.
That's all relative,
talk
though.
To me. Yeah. You know, and what's the problem? I don't get it.
Listeners write in and say, is sex part of BDSM play? Yes,
yes
or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Hell yes. Yes.
Depends.
Depends.
Yes.
Can be, can't be.
If I'm playing with somebody who I've never met, who's brand new, who just needs, like Kavika does, when I am out in the public scene, I tend to play with a lot of new people. It can be sensual, but I am more selective about my sexual partners, really, than I am about my play partners.
You have to go back and ask, what exactly is sex? What is sex to you? I can consider it play sexual, even if it's there's no actual penetration. Or
the brain is the biggest sex organ.
To me, it's all sexual.
It's not. You hit it. The skin is the biggest sex.
So I guess there's a delineation for me between sensual and sexual. And
that may be true. I'm just warning you, right, mistress. If I play with you, I'm gonna be getting off on it. You know.
As would I. So.
Ooh, it's getting hot in here.
I think that sex is part of BDSM, but it does not necessarily have to be involved in every scene. You know, there's one specific person that I play with on a somewhat regular basis where when we very first started playing, sex was not involved. But as we played more and more often, it became involved. Even though both of us believe that sex is part of BDSM, it wasn't in the scenes at the very beginning. As we became more comfortable with one another and got to know each other better, then it started being incorporated. So yes, it's part of it, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen in every scene.
I have known people who did not, although, you know, I think we all have various emotional and or mental needs met by our BDSM activities. I have known people who claimed that the satisfaction and other mental benefit they received from their physical play was in no way, shape, or form sexual. I do not know how that's possible, but that's me personally. And if it gives them pleasure in other ways without it being a sexual thing, hey, you know, more power to them. It's just like what I was saying on the other topics. I'm very live and let live on that kind of stuff. But I do know of some people who claim that their mental satisfaction has no element whatsoever of sexuality.
Now, I take that back. There have been one or two times when I could say that, but that was when I was playing with tops that I was really not physically attracted to. That's a terrible thing to say, but there was absolutely... But when I closed my eyes and I took the sensation, I enjoyed the bottoming, but I didn't particularly have a connection sexually with that person.
I don't know if you've ever seen me play. I have a tendency sometimes to be very loud. I have lots and lots of stress in my life. And for me, I've always been told to be quiet. I don't have to be quiet. I can be loud. I can scream. I can scream. Hit me harder. And I scream. And it's great. And it's very healing for me. It's a huge release to me. And I'm sure people in the dungeon are saying, put a fucking gag in her mouth, will you? You know, but I need to get that out.
Yeah.
So it's a whole nother avenue. Of course, I also get really wet and it's really exciting in other ways, but
I think I've actually had somebody scream, put a gag in her.
More than once.
Sorry. Anyway, sorry, yeah. Just adding to that.
And are you going to hose that furniture down afterwards?
Why? She's doing such a great job right now.
I do have, you know, my sadist, my just pure flat out sadist that I play with. There's no sex involved in our scenes. And he's the one, you know, like I mentioned earlier, he's the one I go to when I'm so full, my cup is so full of stress that I just can't hold anymore. And he's my outlet. When he gets me to the point where I'm purging and, you know, sobbing in a ball on the floor, and that's part of his satisfaction, there's nothing sexual there.
I tend to believe that there is a sexual component to BDSM, whether it happens then during the scene, most likely not, but it could be foreplay for something later on, whether the top goes home and masturbates or whatever. I think there is a very strong component to a sexual BDSM scene.
If it ends in an orgasm, it's sex.
For somebody.
That's what the local DA says too.
That just shot my numbers way up.
Can I add something to that? Can I piggyback on that?
Please.
I have a person, a play partner, and her boyfriend loves it when I top her because he says when they go home, they have the most incredible sex mm-hmm. every time I top his girlfriend.
Rock on.
And on that note, that we bring this irreverent group to a close. Thank you, everybody, for sharing your stories, your life, and your kinky community service with everybody on the Kinky Cast.
You have been listening to episode 20B of the Kinky Cast. This has been the second half of our group discussion. We want to hear from you with your comments or questions. So email us questions@kinkycast.com. Or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, Chrissy, Koika, Kate, Gabrielle, Anne, Lee, Mistress, and Bitsy Blue, I'm Max. Next week, Alan Sloan on the legalities of BDSM.